The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyed Khamenei, has expressed his views on the ongoing talks between Iran and the P5+1 group of countries. Some new demands have been met by the other side that Iran's leader has said that it will not be complied with, like the inspection of any military sites. The foreigners call for interviews with Iranian nuclear scientists, which Ayatollah Khamenei said means interrogation. This edition of the debate will ask why demands which are deemed extraordinary by any means are being made from Iran, which also threaten its sovereignty, and whether this will affect the ongoing nuclear talks.
The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution has criticized the P5+1 group of countries for raising what he has described as new excessive demands in the ongoing nuclear talks with Iran.
از هیچ یک از مراکز نظامی هیچ بازرسی از سوی بیگانگان صورت بگیرد میگن بایستی ما بیاییم با دانشمندان شما مصاحبه کنیم یعنی در واقع بازجویی کنیم ما اجازه نمیدیم به حریم دانشمندان هسته‌ای ما و دانشمندانی در هر رشته حساس و مهم اندک اهانتی بشود
Ayatollah Khamenei says the enemy's bullying shows they don't know the Iranian nation well because the Iranians have proven they will never budge to coercion. Ayatollah Khamenei has also said that Iran will stand strongly against the plots of its enemies.
این را بدانند که اگر شیطنتی صورت بگیرد واکنش جمهوری اسلامی بسیار سخت خواهد بود.
الله اکبر.
On several occasions, Iran has shown good faith by letting in nuclear inspectors. It has at the same time emphasized that it won't accept anything beyond the norms, what it says the inspections of military sites testify to.
No country should allow inspections of its sensitive sites. They're uninvolved, they're unrelated to the nuclear talks going on and continuing to go on, and to add these demands along with everything else that's being placed on Iran is absolutely outrageous.
Now, for a country that international institutions have repeatedly acknowledged to have a clean record of nuclear activities, the persistence over inspection of military sites beyond the current protocols will naturally create a sense of bullying. Therefore, Ayatollah Khamenei's remarks should be seen as a line in the sand that Iran will stand its ground even now that it has accepted to resolve the fabricated crisis out of good faith again.
Our guest joining us for this edition of the debate, co-author of Going to Tehran, Why America Must Accept the Islamic Republic of Iran, and visiting scholar at Georgetown University, Hilary Mann Leverett, joins us from Washington. We have author and political scientist Dr. Kaveh Afriyasabi, who joins us from Boston. I'd like to welcome both of our guests. And let me start with you, Dr. Afriyasabi. Inspection of Iran's military sites, that's quite an extraordinary demand that the U.S. is obviously still pursuing. Iran's leader has come out and said there's absolutely no way that any military sites of Iran are going to be inspected. Why do you think that the side is pushing on this when it's extraordinary in nature to even demand this from another country in negotiations?
Well, hopefully after hearing the Iran supreme leader drawing the line in the sand on that, the U.S. and its Western allies will step back from excess demands and allow the current negotiations proceed smoothly toward the final resolution. I really think that the time has come for some realism on the part of the U.S. and its allies on this particular thorny issue that unfortunately has been also insisted upon by the head of the International Atomic Energy Agency, Mr. Amano. And, there's a convergence of the two-track processes. On the one hand, Iran and the IAEA have been negotiating, and there have been some progress made since November 2013. And then the multilateral talks and the Lausanne statement converged the two by bringing the IAEA into the picture and conditioning the lift of sanctions to the IAEA's verification of Iran's implementation of its agreement. So, the IAEA has a list of demands that has been working with Iran, and hopefully with the resolution of those in the near future, this thorny issue will be removed as well.
Well, Hilary Mann-Levitt, it seems like when these talks are taking place, the U.S. Perhaps maybe displaying something out in the open, but yet in private, obviously, behind the scenes, something else might be going on. But it seems like there's some kind of hype that's sometimes displayed, and sometimes it sends confusing messages. And I'm going to reference to what I'm looking at, which is your page, you're going to Tehran, and you talked about the GCC summit, how it said that if there's any threat that these Persian Gulf countries should feel is from within their own kingdoms, within their own country, and not coming from Iran. How do you see the U.S. In terms of the way that it's pressing on some demands on Iran and the nuclear talks in the context of the region also, if you can?
Well, I think it was very, very important that President Obama, a few weeks ago, gave an interview to the New York Times journalist Thomas Friedman, someone who is very sympathetic to the Israeli position and in some ways very sympathetic to the Saudi position in terms of the ongoing debate and issues in the Middle East. In this interview, President Obama, I was very struck by it, used these terms that there would be access by inspectors anywhere, anytime, any place in Iran. That is something that that is not in the additional protocol to the additional protocol that's being discussed as a possibility for Iran to sign up to increase inspections. That's not at all what the additional protocol hold. So it was surprising that President Obama said that publicly. And then on top of that, our Secretary of the Energy, Secretary of Energy Muniz, who's been the counterpart to Vice President Salehi in the nuclear talks, he made similar public comments here in the United States in an interview with Charlie Rose, another important journalist here in the United States. When these two figures, two of the most senior figures, most important figures in the United States regarding the negotiations with Iran, make those kind of public statements, I think it's because they are focused first and foremost not on achieving a good deal or a good outcome with Iran, but they're focused first and foremost on satisfying the pro-Israeli and pro-Saudi constituencies here in the United States and, of course, our Saudi and Israeli allies.
Dr. Afzal-Zahabi, so focused not on a good deal, but rather on, let's say, pro-Israeli groups, and, of course, their biggest ally being Saudi Arabia. Is that something that is actually going on, though, when it comes to the talks in terms of the different agreements that are being made or trying to be made? I mean, it's one thing when we hear about how Israel is trying to push to torpedo these talks in one way or another, or even some of the regional countries, mainly Saudi Arabia, trying to bring up and trump up the Iran threat, when in actuality, this deal in terms of Iran's nuclear agreements that may come into fruition, has all types of frameworks in it, all types of inspections in it. So what is the deal when it comes to the U.S. and the way it's approaching Iran?
Well, obviously, Saudi Arabia, Israel, and a number of other countries have been trying their best to torpedo these talks and prevent a win-win final resolution. But I think that the train has left the station and the efforts are futile. And we are very near to a fruitful final agreement that will put to rest the international anxieties about Iran's civilian nuclear program and will bring a number of dividends in terms of regional stability. So having said that, I think that the U.S. needs to insulate itself from these kinds of negative inputs by the third parties and focus on its own bilateral relations with Iran. Iran supreme leader has stated that once the nuclear issue is resolved, it's possible to also bring up other issues. And there's a host of regional security issues that is of mutual concern to both Iran and the United States. And, you know, the lingering issues such as, you know, IAEA access and inspection and so forth are, I think, resolvable. The IAEA insists on what is called possible military dimension, which really pertains to the past. And we need a forward-looking and very positive, constructive approach to these talks that sets a landmark in terms of negotiation that has broader implications in terms of the nuclear proliferation regime. I've been to some of these recent meetings at the UN on the NPT review, and there's a chasm between the developing nations and the developed nations over access to the nuclear technology and so forth. So any Iranian final agreement will have broader ramifications in terms of the future of the NPT. And so these issues of concern that has, have been reflected in the leaders' statement is of concern also to a whole number of other developing nations, particularly those that are members of the non-aligned movement that have a very strong presence at the IAEA.
You know, inconsistencies, Hillary Mann Leverett, when it comes, it seems like it obviously bears itself and presents itself as it has done in the past year and a half. Based on these talks, Iran's leader obviously has made some statements, and a couple of them I'd like to get your reaction on. One of them has to deal with how it says that the other side, Iran's leader said the other side wants to interview Iranian nuclear scientists. Now, I'm not too sure if the U.S. memory is short on this, but back in 2007, it was when the U.S. came out and said that, well, the U.S. has admitted that Mossad is behind Iran scientists' assassinations. This is back in March of 2014. Iran's leader has a case in point, doesn't it? And when it comes to overall, of course, the trust issue is on one side. Another part that I'd like to get a reaction on, I'll quickly say this, is about how the U.S. has supported some of these terrorist groups. We could talk about the MKO support from the United States. We could talk about Jundullah. Obviously, this would be the border areas and perhaps something that Iran's leader has made a reference to, that perhaps the U.S., perhaps regional countries are trying to destabilize the borders of Iran.
Yes, these are all very, very important statements that the Supreme Leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran has made. They're very, very important, and they're interconnected. The reason the United States is focused on trying to gain access to Iran's scientists and to Iran's military sites is these are two important elements that the United States can then turn around to show to the Israelis and to the Saudis that a benefit of having a nuclear deal with Iran will be that the Israelis and Saudis through the United States and these international, quote unquote, international inspection teams will have access to Iranian scientists who, of course, the Israelis have killed, not just tried to kill, but killed in the past, and to Iran's military sites. So having access to Iran's scientists and its military sites, I think in the American perspective, will give comfort to the Israelis and Saudis that if they want to press Iran, if they want to put pressure on Iran, they will have the ability to do so. That is related to the American support for Saudi Arabia and Saudi Arabia's use of proxies throughout the Middle East to harm Iran, to undermine Iran, whether that's through the Al-Qaeda-affiliated groups in Syria, in Yemen, or in Iraq. That's a very deliberate strategy, I think, that the Saudis have to project their own power in the Middle East to check what they see as Iran's rise and threat to them in terms of Iran's rising power. So these are very interrelated dynamics. The United States in this summit, it called with Gulf leaders, to which the Saudi and the Saudi king and the Bahraini king refused to appear. But in that summit, the United States promised even more billions and billions of dollars in the most sophisticated U.S. weaponry to these Gulf Arab states, especially Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. And the only reason for those sales of sophisticated weapons is to press Iran. So the trade-off, I think, by the American administration, by the Obama administration, is to get this narrow deal on the nuclear issue with Iran, essentially to constrain Iran and appease Iran in the short term, and then to continue to consolidate and build its alliances with both Israel and Saudi Arabia to maintain America's position in the Middle East, maintain America's ability to project overwhelming military force into the Middle East. That's not something that's unique to President Obama. This is something structural in U.S. foreign foreign policy. It's not something particular to a U.S. president. So it is happening now under President Obama. It happened previously under President Bush. And I think in 2016, when we have the next American presidential election, it will be something the next president will pick up on, the ability to continue to project overwhelming American military power into the region.
Very well. A quick timeout right now. Let's listen to some of the viewer comments as posted on the Facebook page, and we'll get back to the debate.
The only intention of the U.S. is to weaken Iran, but American and Western powers are living in fool's paradise if they think to weaken Iran. The U.S. government is a hypocrite. Even if they get the deal, there are little chances they will stand by it. Israel is continuously refusing anyone to inspect its military sites because they are hiding nukes, and these self-proclaimed police of the world ask Iran for inspections. Bloody hypocrites. Why don't America and Israel allow their military sites to be inspected by other countries? As for me, I would agree with such measures, but only when Iran will inspect the U.S. military bases. Maybe Obama promised this to their Arab allies. Are military sites of America, Israel, Britain, Germany inspected? No. Why should Iran allow them to inspect its military sites?
Just some of the viewer comments there. Well, Dr. Afrasiabi, we got about a month, June 30th, a little over a month before this nuclear agreement were to actually come into fruition. Be formed. Now, we have the statements made here by Iran's leader, and these statements have a lot of weight behind it. These are really things that could derail this whole process, and it seems like it's coming at a time when it's very close to this deadline. Do you think that the talks are going to get derailed? Were these accusations that obviously the Iran's leader has made are true, were they to keep being pressed by the U.S. and some of its regional allies?
Well, it's not simply the supreme leader, but also a number of other officials, including members of the negotiation team, Mr. Najafi, Iran's envoy at the IAEA, as well as a number of military commanders in Iran that have expressed the same point of view. Mr. Najafi, case in point, has said that the Luzon statement does not mention access to the military sites, and is quite correct. I am rather optimistic about the prospect for the nuclear talks and believe that the parties have come so far and have resolved so many of the outstanding issues that it would be really a pity to allow, you know, the differences over this issue, which is really a non-issue because the IAEA has repeatedly confirmed the non-diversion of nuclear material after so many thousands of days of inspection of Iran's facilities and so forth. And the IAEA itself doesn't have the resources, it's not an investigative agency, etc., to conduct the kind of detective type investigations that some of these hawkish U.S. politicians as well as pro-Israel pundits demand from Iran. So I really think that we are on the verge of a final deal, and this issue can be amicably resolved. Iran has agreed to readopt the additional protocol, which allows environmental sampling at certain the sites if there is reasonable information and lack of consistency, abnormality, etc. And, you know, all these issues within the framework of the cooperation with the IAEA can be mutually resolved, but it requires good faith negotiation on the part of the U.S. And unfortunately, we have a very long history of lack of trust that is built in the Iranian collective psyche, as well as Iran's legitimate national security interests reflected in the leader's statement that must be taken into consideration by the Western officials and policymakers. Otherwise, there's a possibility of no deal at all. But I said, I am optimistic, and I think that we're headed in that direction.
Well, I'd like to address the same question to you, Hilary Mann-Leverett, because we got a little over a month. You've heard Iran's leader's statements there. Do you think there's going to be a possibility by any of the parties, the United States, maybe Saudi Arabia, to do something, and of course we can't forget Israel, to do something that may not have these talks reach where they're headed to with this deadline that's looming?
Well, I share my colleague's optimism that there may very well be a deal on the nuclear issue. I would caution, though, that I think if there is a deal, it would be a very narrowly construed deal, something that would allow the United States and Iran to lower the level of tension in their relations that we've had for 35 years, to lower the level. My concern, though, that even if we're able to reach a deal, it will be so narrowly construed and do nothing to address the U.S. role in the region that I think is self-damaging to my own country, to the United States, that the United States will continue to arm, fund, and train not just Saudi Arabia itself, but all of the proxies associated with Saudi Arabia, whether they're in Syria, in Yemen, in Iraq, in Afghanistan, which will continue to make the region very, very dangerous and make the utility of a nuclear deal far less than it should be. What I see as so important about the prospect of a nuclear deal is that it would allow the United States to get off of this very dangerous trajectory to pursue hegemony in the Middle East, to be able to constantly project overwhelming military force into the Middle East, either directly or through our allies. If we had a better relationship with the Islamic Republic of Iran, a real constructive relationship, then the United States may not be in the position to pursue that kind of policy. That's what I see as the critical utility. But because of that, because that's the promise that a nuclear deal could have for the United States, There are very important constituencies that are dead set against it. The pro-Israeli constituencies, I'll just say generally, the pro-Israeli constituencies and the pro-Saudi constituencies. For now, those constituencies in Washington are somewhat disoriented. They've really failed to pursue tactics that can derail an agreement between the U.S. and Iran. But they are very powerful constituencies, and they have a lot at stake. If they lose the United States as their absolute unconditional military backer in the region, if they lose the ability for the United States to continuously project overwhelming military force into the Middle East, both the Israeli government and the Saudi government will be fundamentally undermined because their systems are so precarious. So they will fight this deal. I'm not sure how they will do it, but I think we have not seen the end of their efforts to undermine and prevent a deal between the United States and the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Very well. We're going to leave it there. Thank you very much. Pleasure talking to you, co-author Going to Tehran, Why America Must Accept the Islamic Republic of Iran, and visiting scholar at Georgetown University, Hilary Mann-Leverett there from Washington. And thank you, Dr. Kaveh Afiyasabi, author and political scientist from Boston. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. From me, Kaveh Tavoy, and the entire team in the capital, Tehran. It's goodbye.